Hello and welcome to a special presentation of the Jockey Club and In the Money Media. This is the On the Lead podcast. I'm your co-host, Peter Thomas Fornatale. Very pleased to be working on this new series with a woman who came up with the idea. She works at the Jockey Club. She's Shannon Kelly. Shannon, how are things today?
Pete, everything is wonderful. I am so excited to do this specifically with you because the two of us could riff all day, but we'll try to keep it short and sweet.
Yeah, we'll try not to have too many tangents about the Peloton and Broadway shows and the like and keep it to horse racing. We actually did an episode zero of this podcast. If you subscribe to On the Lead, wherever you get your podcast, there's an episode zero where we go into some of the details about our backgrounds and the shows that are going to be in the series. But we have so much great content for this first episode. I don't want to spend too much time going over stuff that's in that episode zero. But what can folks look forward to hearing in this episode, Shannon?
Well, you know what? I think the core of all things horse racing, if you look at it from the beginning, is the name of the horse. I mean, beginning to end, that's the core of it. So we really wanted to start there specifically because it's such a big part of what the Jockey Club is, which is our registry. So, you know, for those that don't know, the Jockey Club was founded in 1894 as the breed registry for thoroughbreds in the US, Canada, Puerto Rico. So it's our primary responsibility is maintaining that stud book in a manner that ensures the integrity of the breed. So I think we wanted to start there, and people love it. People love hearing about the process of naming horses, how the owners come up with it, how it gets approved. And then we go all the way into the end of talking about how you actually say that name in the race and having Tom Durkin. I mean, you can't beat it.
We've got three great guests for you. We're going to get to them very quickly. We'll be back at the end to tell you about this mailbag feature and talk a little bit about our next episode and preview that. But Shannon, if there isn't anything else, I think we should get to our first guest.
I think we get to it.
For our first guest on this first episode, we bring in the Associate Registrar from the Jockey Club. She is Lori Johnson. Lori, how are you today?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Things are going great. I think we should start with the most basic question of all. What does an associate registrar do?
I register thoroughbred horses. I work closely with the registrar. One of my primary focuses is working with sales identifiers and racetrack identifiers to ensure that the right horse is being raced or the right horse is being sold.
Why is it important that every thoroughbred be registered?
If you want to run your horse or race your horse, you have to register it with the Jockey Club. We are going to verify that the parentage on your foal is correct. The identification, which is typed on every certificate, accurately describes the horse and ensures that that horse can then grow up and later hopefully produce more thoroughbred foals.
Without the work that you do, it sounds like it would just be chaos. You couldn't have a sport without the ability to have these horses registered and understood as to who they are and what their parentage is. It's really at the core of everything we do is what I'm hearing.
Exactly.
A unique identifier is probably a good way to say. Otherwise, it's like not having a name. You know, you just go through life without a driver's license and no ID number, no social security number. We need to figure out who you are.
I'd love to go through the process of how someone registers a horse. What can you tell us about that?
We register everything in the United States, Canada, and Puerto Rico. All of those registration certificates are produced right here in Lexington in our office, where there's a registry staff of eight, and that does include the registrar and the registration manager. First thing that happens as far as registration goes, the overview of it, I guess, would be mares are reported being bred by stallion owners or stallion farms or their agent. By August 1st of the breeding season, so August 1st of 24, all of those reports of every mare that was bred are due in our office from those folks that stand stallions. By the end of November, we know pretty much every mare that was bred and expected to have a foal the following year. So in January, we begin notifying customers, and those are called live foal, no foal reports. So what we're asking for the customer to do is within 30 days of the foal's birth or when the foal should have foaled. The gestation, I don't know if you know, on a thoroughbred is 310 to 380 days. If it's a live foal, they give us the foaling date, the gender of the foal, the state that it was foaled in, and who should be recorded as the breeder of the foal.
How does one submit a name? And what is the review process? I picture it like the Wizard of Oz. There's somebody, making behind a curtain, making the judgments on these things. How does it actually work?
Okay. Customers have three options for naming. There's name claim. So you have an unnamed horse that you need to submit a name for. Name change. You have a named horse that you would like to change the name for. And name reserve. You have a name that you want to hold, but you don't have a horse to give it to yet. And you ask the jockey club to please put that on reserve for you for use at a later time. But the process of submitting those names is the same regardless of whether it's name claim, name change, or name reserve. They can submit their names online, or they can also use a paper form. Once the customer submits their name choices, either online or by using the paper form, our naming software automatically will reject any submission that is identical to a name already in use. Our process is, if you can picture this, when we sit down to process names, the first thing the screen brings to us is the foal's registration number, its gender, color, foaling date, state foaled in, sire, and dam, so that we can look and see this is the horse that we're trying to give a name to. And the next thing that it shows us is the attempt for that horse, the name that they're trying to attempt. Also on that same page, we have a direct link to Google, dictionary.com, Urban Dictionary, Translator, and Wikipedia. And then we have an all button. So if we have a name that we don't know what it means or we're unfamiliar with it, we can choose any of those or click a button that says all, and the system will automatically go out and try to find anything in any of those categories that has that name in it. So that can kind of help us determine what the name means or if it's something we should go ahead and accept or reject.
Do different people do the analysis of that at different times? Is it a committee? How does that piece of it work?
We do have a naming department, but everyone in the registry, remember there's only six of us besides the registrar and the manager. Most of us can do almost any registry process that we have. So there are several different people that can process names.
Are there instances where the person reviewing the name will ask a colleague for help and it'll become more of a group process?
Oh, absolutely. We sit in a room together in cubicles and we can all hear each other. It's not uncommon for somebody to stand up and say, does anybody know what this name means? Or to make comments about names that people are submitting that we find clever or cute. So typically, whoever is processing names that day, depending on the volume of names we have in-house, there may be two or three people processing names. Most of the time, there's no more than two. One will start at the top of the list and one will start at the bottom. Certainly there it's a group effort. But once we have gone through the entire list of names that are out there to be processed, there's also on that same page, there's a list of names that the system finds that could be phonetically the same. So if a name is not a direct hit to a name that's already in use, but it sounds like another name, it is likely going to get rejected. Probably the most common thing that we reject names for is similar to a name already in use. So you don't want two horses that have a similar name at any given time. And I can give you a perfect example of why that would be. But so there was a mare at one time named Get Off My Cloud. And there was another mare named Get Off of My Cloud. Those two mares were very close in age. And they both became broodmares around the same time. When you have farms that are submitting information for the mares on their farm, it is not unusual for them to type the name in wrong. So if you type in, if you've got Get Off My Cloud on your farm and she's got a baby, but you put her name in as Get Off of My Cloud and report that baby, those two mares for several years in a row caused the owners on both sides much grief, because then we had to go and figure out who's got what and which foal came from which mare. So it's really important, but it goes beyond the racetrack. It goes later on in life when they're breeding, so, and producing foals of their own. We try really hard to not have names that are too similar to each other.
If you wouldn't mind, I'd love to run through some of the basic rules.
Okay, so there's 18 characters and or spaces, no more. That's the max. The reasons for rejection are right in front of us when we're processing, but some of those are commercial, artistic, or creative significance. Consist entirely of initials. You can't do that. Consist entirely of numbers below 30. So you don't want to name a horse 7 and then have the horse named 7 be the eighth horse in the race. So it can get very, very confusing. Any name that ends in a horse-related term, filly or colt, you can't use actual numerical designations. Grade one stakes winners within the last 25 years, you can't name a horse after one of those. Historically important or permanent names are protected forever. So there will never be another secretariat. Sometimes it's simply that we need for the customer to supply us the meaning of the name. They've made up a name, they coined it for whatever reason they have, and we'll ask the customer to please submit the meaning of that name in writing. And then once that comes in, that gets reviewed, and depending on what the meaning is, they can or cannot get that name. A name of a person without a required writing. So if I want to name my horse Shannon Luce, then I'm going to need to get Shannon Luce to give me permission. Now, if I don't know anybody named Shannon Luce, I can tell the jockey club, I don't know anybody named Shannon Luce. My daughter's name is Shannon. My cousin's name is Lucy. And so we decided to name our horse Shannon Luce. Those are the kind of answers that we would get. Anything that appears to be designed to harass, humiliate, or disparage. If you have a horse that comes here from another country, the courtesy is the same going the other direction. If a horse is born in France and it is not named when it comes to the United States, when they try to name it here, it has to be approved in this country and in the foreign country. Okay. So those take a little bit longer because then we have to reach to the foreign country to make sure the name is okay in that country as well. And the same holds true if a horse is born here, is not named, goes to England, and they want to name it there, they're going to ask us to approve the name as well. We should note that, you know, we process 35,000 names a year. 75% of those submitted are granted their very first choice. Though if you're somebody who's had two or three rejections, you might not believe that, but it is true. Once those names are processed for the day or for that group, then we produce a list. It's called the names list. And that list goes to several different people in the department. And everybody is looking for maybe, I don't know, a new country song, and it didn't get caught in phonetics. So somebody else might, and they can say, hey, this name, I don't know about this. Or someone may see something that we didn't see, that original processor didn't see, that we can then reject. And then we can also make notes. If I'm in phonetics and I'm processing names, I can say, you know, there's a mare that has a name similar to this, but she's a 1989 and hadn't had a foal in whatever years. And so then those can get looked at, and or if it's an unusual name and we've already received the meaning of that name, we can make note of that on the names list, that we have meaning and what it means, so that those people that are looking at that names list don't do double work and say, hey, we should get meaning for this. We can tell them we already have that. And then once that names list is looked at by us, then it goes to the registrar. And he actually looks at every single name on every single list every single day. We produce at least two names lists a day, sometimes three, during the names deadline, which is February 1st of the two-year-old year. We may produce more than that, four or five lists a day. Folks have until February 1st of the two-year-old year to name a horse at no charge. After that, there's a fee. People will wait until the end of January because that's how we are.
That's your tax season for an account.
Yes, yeah.
Our next guest on this podcast is going to be Jamie Roth from L&J Foxwoods. And I'd love to hear a little bit about the process of reserving a name.
If it's not a reserve name, you're actually applying it to a horse. The reserve names has increasingly gained popularity over the years. That allows you, like I said, to take a name that you'd love to use on a horse someday, but you don't have the right fit for that horse today. So we'll hold it for 1 year or until you tell us who you want to apply the name to. And those name reserves are renewable. So when it gets close to the end of that year, the customer will get a notification for us. These names are up for renewal. And they have the choice to either re-reserve the name or renew the name. Some names that have been reserved, we have some customers that reserve a lot of names. I think Jamie's one of them. She'll be able to tell you a lot more about that, I'm sure. Some of the names you might be familiar with that were on reserve and then given to a horse are all Peter Belmont bred horses. One is Authentic. Authentic is out of the mare Flawless. Imagination is out of the mare Magical Feeling. And Society is out of the mare Etiquette. I personally like when people use the pedigree of the parents, and that's pretty common too. So if you look at Stormcat, produced over 120 foals with beginning with the name Storm, and probably hundreds more with Storm somewhere in the name, or cat somewhere in the name. The more popular the horse, obviously, the more likely his foals are going to be named after him.
That is a classic tradition. I love it in horse naming. Is that something that just evolved naturally as far as you know?
I think it's just something that people do. You want to get the sire and the dam in there if you can, so that if the animal does grow up and do something special, there's a direct link to, oh, that's who it came from. Ties back to the parents and to the pedigree and the importance of that pedigree. You know, winning colors was out of a mare named All Rainbows. Previous registrar, Buddy Bishop, he always said his favorite name was Odor in the Court by Judge Smells. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good one. Some of them are so clever. And there's some farms here in central Kentucky that actually have a name game that they play with their staff. Their thoroughbred breeding farms will own a number of racehorses that race for the farm. When the foals are 2 years old, they'll send a list to all their staff, you know, backside, in the office, everybody that's connected with the horses, and give them the opportunity to submit names for the upcoming two-year-olds. And then once those names are all submitted, they send those names to the owners, and the owners choose three of their favorite names out of what the staff has submitted, and then the farm will submit those names for those horses. So from to quote one of the ladies that I know who won one of those name games at one of our larger farms, she said, "It's a wonderful experience to have named a racehorse, and even more satisfying when the horse comes back home to the farm as a broodmare or a stallion." So I think it's just another reminder, like Kenny McPeak said after his Derby win with Mystical Dan, that behind every great horse is an army of people who help get him there. And that it's not just the vets and the farm staff and the breeders and the owners. That's the people that are mucking the stalls and bathing those horses and feeding those horses and loving those horses behind the scenes.
What is your favorite name?
My favorite name, really, and I don't even know why, it's always been Conquistador Cielo. I mean, just say it. It's a beautiful name. It's Spanish for sky conqueror. And I first saw the name when I was a catalog writer back in the mid-80s. And he was a standing stallion at the time. He's a son of Mr. Prospector, and he won the Belmont Stakes in 1982. And his name always just stood out to me just because it's a beautiful name.
Great stuff, Lori. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Next up, we welcome to the show very successful horse owner who is known, among other things, not just for having a bunch of fast racehorses, but also for being particularly good at the game of reserving names, something we learned a little bit about in our first segment today. From Ellen J. Foxwoods, we welcome to the airwaves, Jamie Roth. Jamie, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Very excited to talk about my naming prowess.
I love that you describe it that way. How did you get known for your ability to do this particular part of the business?
Well, I think most people recognize the name Covfefe just because of her popularity and all that went with it with the president. It really started with a horse named Nickname, who was our first grade one winner. My first four horses that I bought have the worst names. Okay. When I look back, they have the worst names and I'm horrified by it. And I think that all horses should have really good names, creative names. I say it's their license plate, whether they're grade one winners, stakes level winners, or just horses that didn't even run on the track. I think they should have good names. We bought a Scat Daddy mare whose dam was named Nina Fever. So I started researching Scat Daddy. And at this time, I was relatively new in the game. I didn't know much about him other than his race record. So I started doing research and realized that Scat Daddy is a nickname for the owner of the horse. His last name is hard to pronounce. So I thought, wow, okay. Nickname would be a great name of a horse. I thought it was creative. And that's really when it began. And I thought, this is kind of fun, trying to use the dam's name, the stallion, or a sister or brother, or even something unrelated, something that I find important to myself or to my parents. So that's how it started, really, with Nickname and Constellation. When we bought her from a two-year-old sale, she had no spots on her. We gave her a little bit of a break after the sale. Like, her coat shed, and she had all these spots. that she did not have at the two-year-old sale. I thought, Constellation, great name. And that's really when it began and I started having fun. And yeah, I went down a rabbit hole.
What was wrong with those first four names?
They just weren't that creative. I named one of them Fiji Moon. My dog at that time was old and was getting, she was a little sick and she, her stallion was Malibu Moon. So I thought Fiji Moon. She was actually our first winner for LNJ. But out of her became other good names like Tapwater. And, you know, like we have.
It took me a second there. I was like, oh, got it. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And we just named Tapwater's two-year-old. It is hard to pronounce. Good luck to them in Canada. But it really just goes back to this waterfall, this beautiful waterfall in Fiji. So I just try to, you know, make it work in an interesting way.
You can't leave us hanging. What is the name?
It's too hard to pronounce. It's like Vahusava. It's an area with a great waterfall in Fiji.
When you were telling me prior to this podcast that you have one Ellen J spelled like Ellen J, I thought to myself, well, why does she need to spell it out like that? Why can't she name it LNJ? And then I found out you can't use initials. I didn't know that. So now it makes sense why you had to name the horse LNJ.
Yeah. So I got to give the credit to Alex Solis on that one. That was his. I mean, I love it. It's great. Excited for her next race. Hopefully there'll be a good race call with LNJ and LNJ.
Yeah, that would be really interesting for in the winner's circle.
Exactly. Fingers crossed. So
my grandfather, I remember sitting with him as he would name his horses, and he really did it the same all the time. He'd take a bit of mom and dad's names and put them together. Is there a trend now that we're seeing less of that? And one thing that might contribute to it is you had all these private stables that bred their own horses and they didn't go to public auction. And so maybe that contributes. But I think just the rise of popular culture and social media and the fun that comes with hot words and popular words that has maybe changed the trend into being absolutely random sometimes and not include the breeding at all. Do you kind of do a mix of both?
I gotta tell you, not so often. I really try to make a correlation in some ways. We actually, from a very important family of ours, we had the dam. All her foals were fillies. So we were excited because this is a big family and we're so excited to get the fillies. And then all those fillies were only having colt. And so we're like, okay, this is not how we wanted it planned out because we're really a let's raise the fillies, although that's changed. And then last year, and I won't mention the farm, the last mare that was supposed to foal from that family is, of course, a colt. And we're bummed, but happy because it's a live foal. That's all you can ask for. But we're like, oh, man, another 7 colts. We had all these fillies and now they're only having colts. And we get a call the next day. This person says, I'm so sorry. We had 9 foals born that day. I don't know how to tell you this, but you actually had a filly and we were so happy. So for sure, the name of that horse will be Gender Reveal.
That's really good.
For the most part, I really try to make it work.
What are some other names you've reserved?
My list is very long. I have about 150 names on reserve. The biggest issue I have is we have great, great names. You kind of know who you want to apply them to, but you get nervous because you have an idea of the talent of your horse, but you really don't know until they go 5 furlongs, 6 furlongs in the morning, or even sometimes in a race. And I just get nervous. I'm going to give away a really good name on a horse that isn't at the level I was hoping for. But
in your head, you're like, you want to hear this in the Kentucky Derby, right? And then you're like, oh, man, like, did I waste it?
One of my favorite names on our list was Rothko, obviously for amazing artists, but also because our last name is in the name.
Yeah.
So we just named the 2-year-old Covfefe Tappet colt Rothko. That was a hard name to give up, but I figured, hey, if there's anyone to give that name, we'll give it to him.
Did you think about continuing the sort of, dare I say it, trolling trend with the Covfefe babies?
No, I will say I have a bunch of names that were in that realm of should I go there? And then I thought she was too good a filly. It was fun at the time and I wouldn't take back naming her that, but I felt her offspring deserved better names than Jokes.
What are some of your other favorite names you have on reserve?
I've got a lot of good ones, and I thought about this that you might ask, and I'm like, ugh. I don't know. Should I give them away?
Nobody else can have them now.
No, I know. You're right. I'm such a superstitious person that some of my favorite names. One, I love Hamilton. Great. Everyone obviously knows the Broadway show.
We're theater nerds here.
However, though, when you think about it, that could be used in another way. Because you have the F1 driver. He's one of the best F1 Formula One drivers of all time. And so you think speed. I don't think we'll go that route. I definitely think we'll go the theater route. I love the name Best. Just Best. B-E-S-T. I love the name Flash. I'm a big art person, so I love the name Hockney. I love the name Perion. Hopefully you'll be opening some champagne after a race. I also really love the name Pioneer. God, are you guys liking my names? It's quiet.
Yes.
Anything that draws art into horse racing is good. You know, big David Hockney fan. That's a great one. Lewis Hamilton, you know, for speed.
Going back to the art theme, I'm a big street art fan. So we have the name Banksy.
Oh, yeah.
So what I also do is I'll make lists for certain stallions. So, okay, I have a good magic list. And I kind of fit Banksy into that list because it's kind of, you don't really know who he is. It's kind of trying to figure it out. So that's a name that I think could work there if I wanted to go that route. Olympiad, that's been some fun names for me to work on because I have a deep connection to him, having raced him and now standing him at Gainesway. I've come up with some good names. Anthem, Flame, Metal. A cool one could be Aquatic because Fiji Moon was bred to Olympiad. So I'm thinking water, aquatic, because swimming is so popular at the Olympics. To show you how much thought I put into it, we have an Olympiad colt. The dam's name is Portrait. The most famous Olympic photographer or just sports photographer. He's known to photograph Muhammad Ali. His name is Neil Leifer. I reserve Leifer. So there's some that people probably wouldn't know, but hopefully they're good enough that at some point you need to explain it to someone during an interview.
Wait, I just had a great idea, Jamie. You need to reserve for the Fiji Moon and the Olympiad. You should name it 28 medals.
Now I'm going to have to put it in right now.
Well, luckily this doesn't air for a couple days. You got like 48 hours and I'm going to come in the winner's circle when it wins.
Okay, well, let's hope it's a Kentucky Oaks winner and you will be in the winner circle. I will say one of our best names my mom came up with, which was Dog Tag. It's an all-time favorite. Just the play on Diamond Necklace and Warfront. It's just a really creative name. I've got some good athletes, one being Brian. Kobe Bryant was my favorite. I followed him when he was in high school because a good friend of mine lived in Philadelphia. So she used to send me newspaper articles about him in middle school before a lot of people even knew who he was. That I'm going to save a special horse as well.
Really, really cool. Like all of this, all the thought you put into it. And it's really such a fun aspect of the sport that a fan who isn't necessarily an owner or breeder wouldn't know about, right? And this is just such a fun aspect.
The way I see it, it's a really tough sport. It really is. It is emotionally exhausting in good ways and bad ways. So when you can find something to have fun with, go for it. It's really when you had said, would you be on this podcast to talk about it? I had this sigh of relief. Finally, I'm going to talk about something I love. And that's how I feel. I really love. I get such like satisfaction. Like, drop the mic. Wow, this was my best one. You know? So I love it. And by the way, one of my best names that I failed to mention that falls under the good magic theme is Copperfield. It's a good one.
Very good.
Yeah. Very so.
Good. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. I want to touch on two names that I think are my two of my funniest names. I don't think anyone ever really caught on to them, maybe because they weren't maybe at the level of some of my other horses. For A Broken Vows, I have two names that were great. And one of them happened to be named after my best friend's business. She created, her and her brother created a business called I Do, Now I Don't. Long story short, her brother, fiance, just left the ring on the table one day and he never saw her again. So they were like, well, what do people do with their wedding rings? Like, how do they resell them? Like, what do you do in that instance? And so they created a company called I Do Now, I Don't, where they resold wedding rings, which at that time you couldn't do on eBay. First of all, a great name, I Do Now, I Don't. So for one of our broken vows, we named a horse I Do Now, I Don't.
That's great.
I just thought it was brilliant because it incorporated the sire, incorporated my friend, her business, and just, I love that. And it's a one word. It's lots of, you know, lots of letters. And then just another woman. I mean, okay, I mean, that's just a great name. Another woman. Unfortunately, I never, you know, because he passed, but maybe for a dam of a broken vow, I would maybe use mistress.
Jamie, thank you so much for taking time with us today. Really appreciate hearing more about your process. And I love the combination of aspects you put together to come up with these names, with the breeding, with the individuals, with your love for athletes and art. It's just perfect. And we'll be rooting for you.
Well, I appreciate that. Shannon, I'm going to put that name in.
Better.
Very honored to welcome to this debut episode of the On the Lead podcast a man who has a lot of experience with names, not so much coming up with them, though I think he's done a little bit of that, at least on the harness racing side, but pronouncing them, I speak of the legendary race caller, Tom Durkin, coming to us from Saratoga Springs. Tom, how are things today?
Good, good, good. All is well, Pete. All is well.
Is it correct to describe the relationship, at least between some cheeky horse owners / namers and you, as adversarial at times? Is that fair?
I wouldn't go as far as to say that. There's no animus involved. I think some of the owners are just trying to have a little fun. You know, horse racing is about fun, and I never took it too seriously. I made jokes about it, but
we had a great conversation earlier in the show with Jamie Roth and how she comes up with some of her names. And when I think of people coming up with race names and having unusual race naming conventions, I think of Caesar Kimmel. And I swear his naming convention was to troll race callers.
He named a horse Flat Fleet Feet. Okay. So he tried to, and she was good too. She ran on the test stakes. She was very fast. I kind of gave him an up yours during the race call of the text. I said, and this was a fact, they have one in 44 and 4. I said, Flat Fleet Feet flies 4 furlongs in 44 and 4. and I, you know, and a little bubble over my head was saying, take that, Caesar.
When it's a name like that, it's a tongue twister. Do you practice beforehand, or are you riffing when you come up with these amazing puns? Is it all off the cuff?
Yeah, I do prepare for whatever might happen. Of course, it never happens that way.
Of course.
But I'm prepared to do it. But, you know, sometimes, you know, it is off the cuff. For there was a horse called Arg.
Yes.
Okay? And by the way, what I since found out that when I was doing my Arg calls, that there is actually September 19th every year is National Talk Like a Pirate Day. So there you go. There's something for you. But Arg, and I just rolled with it and went, Arg, 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 you know. But you have to be very, very careful. You must tread very carefully when you introduce humor into race calls, because people are betting money on it. I do it rarely. You just have to be very judicious about it because, again, people are betting money. But, you know, when you get it, when they name a horse Arg, roll with it, baby. Come on. And,
right.
And it was funny. I mean, people that summer, people walking down the street down Broadway, instead of saying hello to each other, they go, Arg, 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 Arg.
I bet it was funnier on Caroline Street than Broadway as the night went on.
Things do tend to get funnier on Caroline Street, usually around 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yes.
Speaking of research, Tom, how much goes into learning how a name is supposed to be pronounced, and what is the process for doing that?
It's so much easier now. Before the computer age, I carried from one announcer booth to the other an unabridged dictionary. And I don't know if you've ever had an unabridged dictionary, but it weighs about 10 pounds. It's huge. One thing I did find out was never ask a trainer how to pronounce a horse's name, because they don't know.
They definitely don't know.
Woody Stevens owned a horse or trained a horse called, you won the Belmont, Caveat. Well, he called it Cavite. Yeah. So I would never ask the trainers. I'd ask the owners. But then once the you could get the, there was so much information on Google. It's so easy now, and you don't, you know, it just takes 2 seconds. Before, it might take a couple phone calls or burrowing into the Underbridge dictionary.
When a name is ambiguous, do you still, you mentioned the trainer is a dead end, but when a name is ambiguous, would you try to reach out to an owner through an intermediary? Would the jockey club themselves be able to give you any guidance in terms of how a name is supposed to be pronounced or who the person would be to answer that call? Ultimately, what's your responsibility as a race caller to get the name as the person who named the horse intended it?
Just try your best. You call the owner pretty much, try to get a hold of the owner. If you can't, then you just try your best. There was a horse called Yaka Hicka Mikadola. I mean, what do you do with that? Do you play that straight? So I called the horse, you know, they're off the gate and there's Yaka Hicka Mikadola and blah, blah. And the next time we went, there's Dika Yaka Mola. And time it was Dola Hola Maka Raka Nika Daka. You just roll with it, baby.
We had Jamie on and she talked so much about how much fun she has with it. So I think an owner who has so much fun naming them is also going to find the humor and the fun in how it's called when they actually get to the race. So I think there is probably 80% of the time the owner who's put so much humor and thought into that name is going to appreciate what the race caller, especially one as legendary as you, Tom, does with it.
And two, I mean, breeding has a lot to do with how horses are named. I mean, you try to ideally get something that matches the dam and the sire, and the resulting foal has a name that reflects both of them. I own some harness horses. We had a dam, Electra Hanover, her name was. My partner in the business, Joe Spadaro, he does everything, but I just get to name the horses. I try to keep track of her dams by naming them alphabetically for every year that she, you know, had a foal. Joe and I are both Italophiles, so we didn't have her first foal. We bought her for the second foal. So the second foal was Bravissima, a filly, very brave. The next one was Coraggioso, courageous. He, by the way, made $680,000. The next one was Determinato, very determined. The next one was Electrosante, electrifying. And then came F, Fortissimo, very strong. So a lot of people do that in terms of naming their horses to just relate to the breeding, keep track of them.
As a race caller, do you have a pronunciation that slipped through, something that you wish you had back?
Not that I can recall, but I do recall another announcer. He had a horse he kept calling Fit for Raking, Fit for Raking. And like, Fit for Raking, that's a stupid name. And I went, wait a second, how about Fit for a King? That might work.
Oh, yeah, that also just went over my head for a second. And
that's
then I got
great.
It.
Sounds like you really enjoy coming up with these names yourself.
Sometimes, you know, you kind of flunk. I flunked one time, many times academically, but when we had a horse that was from Electra Hanover by a sire named SJ's Caviar. Okay, so if you know your Greek tragedy, you know that Electra was the mother of Oedipus.
Yep.
And know your high-end food, you know the caviar is fish eggs. So I named the horse Oedipus Complex.
Wait, I think that's good.
People that bought the horse didn't. They changed the name of me. I don't know. Maybe they weren't into Greek tragedy. I don't know.
Yeah. I think, too, what's so fascinating about the whole race calling portion of the naming is that it's like the great theater moment when the name is right and the race is right. I mean, it could change the whole history and what that horse is known for just with that call. And obviously that's got to be a lot of pressure sometimes, that, you know, it's a race of a lifetime, right? And it's your moment to make this like the storybook ending.
I'm glad I didn't talk to you before I had to call a big race. Jeez, thanks for putting the pressure on.
Well, I mean, now you're retired, so it doesn't matter. But I mean, you did such a great job with it. It's amazing how those calls just like live on forever. And like, Rachel Alexander the Great. I mean, it's just amazing. Like, people just remember that for a lifetime. It's such a valuable part of this game.
Nobody told me I was a good racetrack announcer calling $2,500 claimers at Cahokia Downs every night. Network.
Tom, thank you so much. Really appreciate your time today and look forward to talking to you again for a much longer visit soon.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Shannon, I don't know about you, but that was an absolute blast. Learned so much and was so entertained by that trio. This is what podcasting is all about. It's all reflected glory. You just find interesting people and let them talk, and you don't have to do much else.
Oh, I completely agree. And if Jamie's horse that I effectively named goes somewhere, I am in that winner's circle. I don't care what happens. That is happening. I am going to be with bells and whistles on. So I really loved it. And I think hearing from Tom and hearing from Jamie and getting the logistics from Lori, it was so great. I think people like to know the behind the scenes, and we hope we gave that to everybody.
And you hear the passion that all three of today's guests have for their role in the game. And it's just wonderful to hear. And it's part of what makes racing such an interesting sport is obviously the animals at the center of it. But the people who take care of them is what, to me, makes racing such an interesting business to be in. Let's do a quick preview of our next episode, because we do have a mailbag feature and we'd love to hear questions from you, the audience. Shannon, give them the email and tell them what we're going to be talking about.
So we have an email address that you guys can send in your questions. We're not sure if we're going to do it every episode, but this email address is going to exist. We're going to pitch it right at the end of each episode and say what we're going to talk about on the next one. So our next episode is going to center on aftercare. So any of your aftercare questions or comments, send it to otlmailbag@jockeyclub.com. We'll have that on all of our social feeds as well, so that you can find that and send in your aftercare questions and comments. Maybe it's a horse that had a second career. Tell us about it. Tell us your favorite one, and we'll see if we can incorporate it. We're going to have a really good show, and I think it's a great aspect of the sport that we want to promote and talk about. It's a really important part of the sport.
Couldn't agree more. Very much looking forward to that. We're known at In the Money Media for doing production meetings in the middle of shows. So let's do a quick one here so we can give people an idea of the release schedule of these shows. How often do you see us dropping?
I think we're probably looking at every 2 weeks or so. We'll have a new episode. It's a busy summer season, but me and Pete are here for your entertainment. So we will be getting on the airwaves and recording this stuff. We're excited about it. And I think what better time than when Pete and I have our feet up in Saratoga enjoying every moment than recording more of these episodes.
Let's do it, Shannon. Great stuff. For now, we're going to leave it there. Thank you so much for tuning in.
We'll thank Lori and Jamie and Tom, everyone at the Jockey Club, especially Dan Torgman for all his help, and Jim Gagliano for his belief in this project. And we'll close this show stealing a line from our friend Spencer Lugenbuehl, and we'll just say, we'll see you next time.